Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Retrofitting and sustainability are the future of construction. Visit sullis.ie/greenskills to find your course.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
It's time for the Friday Gathering, and I'm joined in the studio this week by Damien English, Minister of State for Business, Employment and Retail, Richard Boyd-Barrett, People Before Profit TD, Dr. Aideen Hayden, who's a former senator and former chair of the housing charity Threshold, and Jennifer Bray, political correspondent at the Irish Times. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for being here. Richard, I want to start with your motion of no confidence in the Minister for Housing this week, because you handed them a fairly big win there, you know, cementing their position ahead of this transfer of power. It didn't really achieve much else, did it?
No, I don't agree. I think the reason we put it forward is because we are desperately trying to put a maximum pressure on the government to do things that so far they have refused to do. And to be honest, I think it has actually put them under pressure. So,
wow, they had an easy win.
Well, see, I'm interested in solving the housing crisis rather than making political...
Well, how did that solve the housing crisis?
Because we were trying to get them to move, and we're still trying to get them to move on things that we'd put down a motion calling for a number of things to be done by the government in June, mm-hmm. and they voted against it at the time. But since then, they've started to move on these things, and we were trying to put further pressure on them. So we want, for example, a much more proactive policy of buying properties and houses where people are threatened with eviction coming up, many of them threatened with eviction in the new year. We want more houses bought from the private developments than just the 10 or 20% that they're currently getting in order to build up the public housing stock. We think that the income thresholds, which we've been pushing for, and I'd specifically push for the last few months, and we had that announcement then this week that finally they were going to push up the social housing income threshold.
And all that is fine, and we know those arguments, but what I'm trying to get at is, you know, what did that achieve during the week other than taking up a lot of time in order for the government to prove that they have a solid majority? Aideen, did you think that it put pressure on the government?
I think the government are under enough pressure on the housing front without motions of confidence on the issue, to be honest. And I think, you know, everybody, including people in the NGO sector, people within government, people within opposition, are well aware of what of the difficulties and the significant difficulties we're facing. I think, for example, the whole issue, and Richard has mentioned it, of progressing some of the strategies that will bring us forward in terms of helping to deal with this situation, have actually been progressed in the last number of months. And therefore, I mean, on the one hand, I mean, I don't disagree, Richard, there's no harm in putting on pressure. But on the other hand, I think there, you know, there is an issue around, you know, talk and talk for the sake of it, and then just getting
on with
actually
doing it. And
that's
what you think that was during the week?
Well, look, no disrespect to Richard, and he and I served with each other over a number of years. What did it achieve? And I think you raised the point there. What did it achieve in reality?
Well, Jennifer, you were witness to this during the week. What did it achieve? What was it like watching it?
Honestly, you could have written the script for what was said and what happened before it even happened, because it's quite predictable kind of how it would play out, and the arguments have been very well hashed out this year, and they will be again next year and the year after, especially given there's very concerning trends in relation to the drop-off in residential construction activity. I think there's the element that Richard mentions, which is putting the government under pressure, but there's also politics of it. You know, the opposition are going to use every single tool in their armoury to put the government under pressure, and motions of confidence and no confidence are probably the best way to do that. And I think the other aspect of it is if you look at the numbers, the government's counter motion of confidence passed 86 to 63 with one abstention. So it kind of did emphasise that they do have a working majority again in the Dáil. So it was good for the government in that way. But I think you will see many more motions of confidence over the next... It's going to be a regular feature of politics, I presume.
What do you want to say?
Well, what I want to say is, you see, when we put forward motions with practical, positive proposals in June, they were completely ignored by the media and put the government under no pressure. So if you are going to put the government under pressure, you're forced to do things like that in order to get these issues onto the agenda and to try and get actual movement on policy, right? And that's what we're concerned about, is that the government were refusing to move on key policy issues. Now, actually, they have moved this week.
There you go, Damien, it worked.
Look, a couple of points. First of all, I think the government and anyone who's in it is fully aware of the problems with housing, and we're well committed to resolving this for a long number of years. And there's a list of actions over the last probably 4 or 5 years that are assisting with supply. The big focus on supply of housing. Richard listed out 4 or 5 actions there. They've all been done. I mean,
they're not being done, Damien. Sorry, just
to be clear, I mean, the threshold increase was announced a couple of months ago by the Taoiseach. The supply of housing is well up. There's four and a half billion committed to delivering housing. We all know it can't happen fast enough. But for me, Claire, the opposition's fine. They can put down these motions. I see them, they're coming quite regularly as part of what they can do. And they generally are before as a martyrs or some reason connected to it. But what does it achieve? I sat there for a lot of that and I watched some of it on the debate, right? Most of the opposition actually were gone by the end of it, to be honest with you. They weren't there. There was hardly a Sinn Féin person in the place. I heard no new ideas, no new solutions, which tells me the government are doing everything possible to try to solve this, because we know it has to be solved. We're all at one here. But Richard, no offence to you, nothing new came out that day that we can implement or try, but are trying to do everything faster, which we're doing. We're committing the people, the money, the targets, the policies, everything we can do. There'll be no stone left unturned to build new houses, bring in new social houses. And I totally agree with you about it. If someone's in a house and there's an option for the state to buy it to protect them, we should do that, and we are doing that. Yeah. We did it in my time there, and it's been done again, and it's right to do that.
Damien, no new ideas.
I mean, could I just move to one particular issue that came up during the week, Claire, and it related to the, you know, the ban on evictions, for example, which was introduced on the 1st of October. Now, I mean, the reality of the matter is, you know, that was I believe, a very positive move that the government took in the first two quarters of 2022 alone. Almost 3,000 notices of termination were issued through the RTB at a time when we know from DAFT, for example, that there's less than, 1,300 properties available to rent in the entire country.
So we spoke on this programme and in the Irish Times as well, Jeanette Brown, who came back from being away, owns an apartment, has tenants in it, asked the tenants to leave, and because of the eviction ban, she can't get back into her property. Now, she is couch surfing at best, sleeping in her car at worst.
Yeah, I heard that interview, and that's to be honest, I mean, I read also the piece in the Irish Times as well. And to be honest, I don't think there's anybody out there who would not feel extremely sorry for her. Mm. It is a really, really tough situation. Mm. And there's no doubt that you do have unintended consequences from actions that are taken. But the reality of the matter is, you face a scenario where 3,000 notices of termination within 6 months. 3,000 notices of termination. Yeah. There is nowhere for those people to go. And I do understand where that lady is coming from. But most of those notices of termination are given because those properties are being sold by landlords.
You described it as unintended consequences. If that is the case, and if there are only a very small number of people in her situation, could an exception, Damien, not be made for people like her?
Look, again, it's a temporary ban on evictions. I don't believe in permanent bans, to be honest with you. There's other policies.
So she only has to sleep in her car until
two reasons. There was two complications there. It wasn't just because of the temporary ban. In relation, there was difficulty with her, with her notices to her tenants before that. So there's a bit more to the story. But I do feel sorry. I feel sorry for anybody that's in a homeless situation. But what I would say, and it's touched on what Aidan has said, that the increase in termination notices this year was on the back of COVID as well, because there was other preventions as well during COVID. But what we do is, and this is something that Richard touched on, and I agree with him. When does the tenancy when it's about to end? The state does step in through the local authorities. There's a couple of hundred million set aside to fund this specifically to prevent someone becoming homeless in the first place. And if you look back over the month of October, as an example, about 1,300 families were prevented from going into homelessness by stepping in to either buy the house, agree new rent, make a new deal with the landlord, or find a new home for them. So there are a lot of prevention measures. They're not enough to prevent everybody.
I suppose going back to that Jeanette Brown situation, it's just really...
So in Jeanette's case, my understanding is she's entitled to assistance as well.
Okay. We said that to her. But look, we're looking at a situation where somebody has to be made homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, either her... or the
correct,
tenant.
Correct. And that's why I would always say, personally, I don't believe that these ban on evictions are a solution long term. Mm. At extreme times, like during a weather event or during COVID, you have to use them. But I think they are a deterrent to supply in the long run.
If you just take a wider view, though, it's a dire It's a dire situation.
But that's why you
housing
have to increase
dire
supply.
I think the reality
And the only way you can do it, Claire, is to work your way through by building in, bringing in more houses. And I think the quick win for us, as well as getting the new builds up, which are well up, thankfully, right? But also a major focus now around vacancy. That can give us the excess supply of housing we need in the short term. And there's every effort being made to do that, but we need a response from everybody.
Could I just support Richard on one point that he made there? And I think, you know, the real issue is, what measures are the government taking? And I think when you bring in something like a ban on eviction, you need to be able to turn around at the end of those 5 months, and you need to point to positives. And you need to say, we did this, this, this and this in the 5 months that we had that ban in place. One of the things that I agree with Richard completely is the powers of local authorities to step in and buy properties directly. Now, unfortunately, it's my understanding, contrary to yours, Minister, that local authorities have been slow off
They should do it and they can do it.
You had a good right? You see, this is the point, and it was precisely linked to the point, the no confidence motion, because we were the ones who argued before anybody else in that Dáil that you need, we were campaigning around a block in Dunleary for 2 years. It still hasn't got over the line in terms of the purchase, where there's 15 empty properties and tenants threatened with an eviction, right? And we argued again in the summer that there needed to be a proactive policy by the government to buy properties where people were threatened eviction, and I want to repeat this point because it relates to the case that you're talking about, to get a higher proportion of the new developments that are coming online for public and affordable housing, so that in situations like that, it isn't a Hobson's choice between one person and another person being made homeless. The state has the money at the moment to buy more of the properties that are near completion on the road outside of here.
I just want to get Jennifer in, then I'll come back to you. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I just think it's interesting because obviously this also comes in a week when we have a lot of debate around planning laws and around sort of reform and the bottleneck that are there. And we can see even in that debate, there's, you know, pushback from Green Party ministers. And, you know, some aspects of that planning legislation would address some of the concerns that you're talking about in relation to local authorities stepping in, dereliction, all those kind of measures. And I think it's interesting to see, to hear these points being made, but also to see kind of at the cabinet table opposition to planned reforms. And that legislation is very, like, there's a number of different measures in the planning legislation. I mean, one of them would compel property owners and developers to share the uplift and value of the land after a rezoning decision. Local authorities are able to have more power on compulsory purchase orders. And then there's the controversial measure, which is the judicial reviews. And that's the issue which has emerged, and I think, which will be a major bone of contention for the government and the Green Party, because I think you can expect a clash on that.
What are you going to do about that?
I'll come back to planning in one second. Just to finish on relation to the money available to buy up houses that are vacant, because I think I agree with Richard on this. And mind you, a lot of the opposition pushed back in this over the years, and we've tried to do this, but not you, Richard.
Not us.
There are funds specifically set aside for local authorities to go in and buy up vacant properties and refurbish them, number one. There's funds set aside for private people to do the same with their own homes. But there's also funds set aside to buy up a house that a landlord feels they have to sell for whatever reason. The state can go in and buy that. It was set up in my time when I was there by others as well. The local authorities don't always use it. I think they should use it more. I encourage them to do it. But the money is there, Richard. You know that. And I do think it needs to be driven at local authority level. They should do this where they can. There's always complications, but in most cases, they can step in and prevent harassment. And they do that.
What are you going to do about the green objections to planning reform? Because it's fairly entrenched. I mean, a lot of them were on air saying we're absolutely opposed to these restrictions now on who can take a judicial review.
So again, what you have coming forward here is a new piece of planning legislation. That it's a consolidation planning piece that's a lot of, over the last 2 years of work by the Attorney General, by Minister Peter Burke.
Yeah, we know what it is. What are you going to do? How are you going to bring the Greens on?
So again, it's a planning legislation piece is on a journey. So it has to go through real scrutiny, has to go into all the stages of the Dáil, and there's chances to perfect this legislation. What is it trying to achieve? It's trying to achieve to bring certainty to anybody who engages in the planning system, be you a promoter, a developer, a state-backed project, or an objector, that there's agreed timelines that we can all follow. Because at the moment, there are timelines in planning that can go on for 3 or 4 years. That's not helpful to anybody. We want to be able to deliver more housing, to deliver more in infrastructure. There's 160 billion set aside for capital infrastructure in this country, which we can't spend because of delays in planning.
One of the aims, it would seem, is to prevent groups of people from taking a judicial review.
So again,
and there's an access to justice question.
Well, we're very clear on this because we're governed by rules from Europe in relation to giving people the right to object. And there should always be a right. I've no problem with that. It's when it takes too long and the timelines drag on and drag on and drag on. So So what the change that's been proposed here, and again, it has to go through all the stages of the dial yet, are around what's the reason a person is objecting? Have they got a valid reason? Are they impacted by the development, or are they driving from Cork up to Donegal to make an objection that doesn't affect them at all? That's something that, has to be dealt with. So then so we're saying it has to be individuals with a reason to object, as well as an environmental group with genuine environmental credentials, not someone that was set up over a week ago to make an objection. It has to be proper, logical objections to developments. But the big focus of this planning change is...
Yeah, but who decides if my objection is valid?
No, well, again, the planning bill will deal with who decides this. We're setting out a process of who is in a position to do this. But the biggest part of this reform is around...
You're shaking your head though.
The most important part of this is that you actually fix planning at an earlier stage in the planning stage,
as
opposed to planning
application. This is a total red herring. The government itself, and I've been waving this document around all week, right, produced a document during the summer which explained what the problems were with advancing construction of housing. Not once did it mention planning. Not once did it mention public objections, participation, any of that. What it said were the following. We have huge numbers of planning applications already through, but nobody's building. It pointed out that there are 75,000 planning permissions for apartments, but only 5,000 being built a year. And it said explicitly that this was down to speculation, right? That the people were speculating, using planning permissions to increase the value of their property, not to build houses.
So you're saying there's nothing wrong with the planning process?
There is no problem whatsoever with the planning process. Damien, you had a good run. Just let him finish the point. Secondly, it said there was a problem with the cooperation, collaboration between contractors, designers, and the people who were commissioning buildings. In other words, the privatisation process, which the government have exacerbated in terms of the LDA and so on, because the left hand isn't cooperating with the right hand when it comes to actually building and procurement for the development of public sites, right? Those are the problems. It is nothing to do
with... So you don't think we need planning reform?
No, I don't. I'll tell you what I want to see in the planning bill, and I bet you this won't be in it, that the 20% social and affordable housing requirement goes up to 40 or 50%. I bet you the government won't do that.
Can I make 3 points? First of all, Richard, there are planning difficulties and there's delays in many projects, state projects as well as individual projects, people's one-off housing, many situations where you could be in a system of planning process for 2 or 3 years. That's not conducive to any good development. And to address your concern,
your own report, government report, Damien said it, the IGES report, have you even read it?
Of course I've read it, but again, it points out many complications with development, not just planning. Planning is one of them. Many other areas
doesn't mention planning.
Richard, I live in the real world, so do you. You know there's planning difficulties. Can I make the final point? In relation to the percentage of land that's used for housing, for affordable and social, I think in many cases, when the state step in to buy land through local authorities, they do actually buy a lot more than 10%, 20%. In the public lands through the Land Development Agency, as you know, the majority of land will be used for public housing, affordable and social, and rightly so. And that's what you need to do. The last point I would say, if this major planning reform is actually about stepping back, it's about getting planning right at the plan stage, when you're zoning land in the first place, that you can look at all the complications and all the additional needs for communities that are there and will be there at the plan making stage, not a planning application stage where it's too late.
What's your take on this? Do we need this planning reform?
I believe we do, yeah. And through, you know, different aspects of housing I've been involved with over many years, I think, you know, there is a serious issue around planning and progressing through the planning system. But I would agree with Damien on this one that really we need to move into a completely different type of planning system. In other European countries, you know, the system does not work like it does here. An awful lot more effort is put into the development of draft development plans. And I think one of the issues we have here is that people don't really take development plans seriously.
Right.
We don't have scenarios. I'd love to see a scenario in my own area where we could all go down and vote on what we want to have in the development plan. I'd like to see use of, say, for example, 3D IT, so I can visualise what something's going to look like into the future. I totally agree that we should be having 10-year planning frameworks. Yeah. I think one of the things that's hampered this country consistently in the whole area of housing, not just planning, everything, has been short-term solutions to what are really long-term problems. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're going to look at planning, That's a very good place to start.
So where the government is starting now with this planning reform that we heard about this week, and the Greens are not happy about aspects of it, is that the place to start?
I'm talking about the overall legislation. Yeah. And what I'm saying is that in terms of the overall legislation, the aspects that I am most interested in is seeing us moving from 6-year to 10-year development plans. Mm-hmm. I would like to see real money put into community engagement. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see resources given to community groups being given technical assistance so they can actually assess the development plan that's being put forward and actually be able to make judgments on it. Yeah. And once it's done, then it should be done.
That's 100% exactly what's trying to be achieved here. And again, when we were involved in the planning framework out to 2040, that was to take a long-term view for this country for 20 years of planning. And this now, this legislation follows suit with that now, to put in place 10-year local development plans that should be community orientated, driven by the communities, and they're often asked to engage, but because you're right, people don't buy into that development plan development stage, and we need to focus on that as well, along with setting aside the resources. And I referenced earlier on that the 160 billion of capital funding, that's matched up with the planning framework for the next 20 years, and if we implement that properly, it means we can get, for once in our lives, we'll be able to fix housing, fix an infrastructure problem, public transport. It's because you're looking 20 years ahead, and rightly so. That's what you have to do to get planning right, and if that was done years ago, we wouldn't have today's
there clearly is an issue with planning objections, and politicians from all political parties in councils across the country have been guilty of objecting sometimes en masse to planning. On the other hand, the issue which has come up here this week, it's about limiting public participation in those decisions. And I think what we saw this week is actually only a flavour of the actual debate, which will come before the Oireachtas Housing Committee in the new year. Because like you said, the devil being the detail, who decides if your planning objection is logical or not? Who gets to set the barometer of what is or is not logical? How much will public participation be limited? And I know you're nodding your head, but there clearly is an issue with objections.
But we are governed by the Oireachtas Convention with Europe.
I'm aware,
we're agreeing to that.
And so, I know the Taoiseach has said that legislation is compliant.
So we're not restricting that at all. Yeah. It's to put some sort of a time management issue behind it, so that people have certainty about time.
Residents associations would not be able to
lodge. If residents have concerns,
in the way they did before, you'd have to go as
they'll
an individual.
Have plenty
That's
of ways
clearly a major
to lodge
change.
An objection. Don't worry.
I'm aware.
Look, first of all, you see, you have to have evidence to make these statements, right? And I repeat again, the government's own report says we have plenty of planning applications. The debate is often about what type of planning. Right. So you take, for example, a site in Dunleary that we were actively campaigning to get public housing on. And then a co-living development is proposed for that, right? Which is now totally discredited. The government have had to abandon that. We wanted public and affordable housing on that site. Instead, a private developer decided to put a co-living development on that site. Right. So we absolutely objected to it, because we wanted public and affordable housing. It's not going to contribute to solving the housing crisis in Dunleary. And the big problem, if you take the biggest residential development in the entire country, which is not far from here, Cherrywood, is, and we supported planning on that years ago, right? But we asked for a higher social and affordable component that was resisted actively. They have sat on that site for pretty much 15 years, and they are drip feeding the building, right? What we need is use it or lose it provisions, where if private developers get planning permission, they have to build. And if they don't build, it should be taken off them.
And you were asked, Richard, weren't you, about objecting over the last 2 years to 1,300 homes?
Absolutely, because we, in all of those cases, all of them, we wanted housing on those sites. Mm. But then what we got were proposals for stuff that would not be affordable. I mean, if you take the proposals that's just been mooted for here on this site, RTE, if I was the representative for this area, I would oppose that development and say we should have more 3 and 4 bedrooms in it, a higher proportion of social and affordable. That's not objecting to housing. It's saying the development there is going to contribute nothing. €600,000 they are talking about for the properties. What use is that to people who are on a housing list, to
not
people
much.
Who can't afford? It's not just to come in,
Richard, there's 2 points there. First of all, I want to be absolutely clear, this is not limiting anybody's right to object. I fully believe in that, and I have no issue with people objecting. My issue is that when it's into an endless time, because Dublin for years and years and years. Sorry, Richard, please.
You mentioned as well someone from Cork objecting to something in Donegal. What's wrong with that? If I have an environmental concern about this island as a whole, I'm entitled to do that.
That's my point. So if you're a genuine environmental reason...
Who's going to decide whether I'm genuine? You're going to appoint... the government's going to make a call.
So, Claire, that's what I'm saying. The legislation has to go on a journey now where we can all contribute to this. But that's the aim here, that you put some shape and around planning. Who has a genuine reason to object, not just some other commercial reason, maybe in some cases. There has to be genuine reasons because planning is about what's best for our community, what's best for our country, and what are we trying to achieve here. And if we have proper development plans that are 10-year length, matching up with a 20-year national framework, then you're into a good, logical conversation of planning that can deal with community involvement and community needs.
Would you be happier now after tomorrow? Would you be happier if Fine Gael had the housing brief?
Look, for what's important for me is the programme for government and the two housing strategies that we've new housing plan for Ireland now, on top of the previous one, Rebuilding Ireland. They're working and that we continue with them. The programme for government is like the government's Bible. So regardless of who or what minister is there, once you stick to the policy, the funding is there to drive them, you get them implemented. For me, what's key here is the next couple of years of government is around delivery and fast-tracking delivery.
Didn't we, Fine Gael had this meeting and there were some breakout groups about housing and all
but
sorts
we,
of
we
ideas.
We do that on many issues on a regular basis. And rightly so, which
I just wonder, do you have the ideas, but you don't want the portfolio?
Claire, sure, we're in the portfolio and I think we made great progress. When we were in it, we made some great progress.
Didn't end great though, did it?
Dara O'Brien is continuing and making some great progress as well. In my view, housing is on a journey to being fixed, not quick enough. So we need to speed it up as quick as we possibly can. And what we do as a political party, of course we do. We focus in on the issues every week and we pick different topics and we will always do that. And we work with the various ministers and we should continue to do that. But the programme for government is key that we drive that on.
Okay, last thing I would say,
Richard talks about objecting. Yep. Richard and many people in Sinn Féin find a different reason every week to object to housing. It's
Damien's
a different
had his Weetabix this morning on your
head. Yeah.
I was just going to mention on the reshuffle, there were some interesting comments from Micheál Martin this morning. It was presumed that he would go to foreign affairs.
Yeah.
And he made some comments this morning in Brussels, effectively saying, talking about his passion for education. So
interesting.
Yes, I thought
that, hasn't been in the speculation at all.
No, and also I've been talking to Fianna Fáil kind of TDs for a piece I'm doing for tomorrow, and there's a feeling in the party that if he chose foreign affairs, that would be a signal to the rest of the party that he's not that interested in getting into the nitty gritty and, you know, the brand of Fianna Fáil and leading the party effectively for the next years. But if he chose a brief at home, that sends out a signal to the troops effectively.
Okay. Well, look, we could be in for some surprises tomorrow, but we can only wait and see. Now, we were hearing earlier this morning that the Taoiseach said the Defence Forces are sending a team to Lebanon to assist the UNIFIL investigation into the killing of the Irish peacekeeper Sean Rooney. We heard about that prayer service in Killa in East Cork last night for the seriously injured trooper Shane Kearney. Damien English, it's been an incredibly difficult week. We're all thinking about the families affected, the friends, the members of the Defence Forces too.
It really is, and my condolences to the Defence Forces, to the families, both Sean's family and then Shane's family, who are extremely worried in the community they're gathering there as well. Look, it's so long since this has happened, and it's a reminder of all the lives that have been lost over the years by our Defence Forces, who are out there fighting for peace and trying to protect for peace and representing this country in very, very important missions. It's a tragic, and I think it's right that it's investigated and we see what's happened here to try to make sure and prevent for the loss of life as well. But it's very, really, really sad, and my heart goes out to the families.
Absolutely, and our thoughts are with both families and everyone who has been affected. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming in today. That's all we've time for. Today's programme was produced by the series producer Alistair McConnell, research by Ciarán Dunn. Jarlath Holland was our broadcast coordinator. Harry Bucklis was on sound, and it's over now to Ronan.